Hello, and welcome to the Declined Estate Internet Radio Stream, the show in which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Declined Estate is proud to bring you one of surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. If at any point you would like to call in and weigh in on the conversation, please contact Skype user Declined Estate with a text message, and we'll do our best to get you on the air. If you are interested, we may keep you on. That's Declined Estate, spelled out one word, no punctuation. You can find us on the web at our official website, declinefm.com, where you will find a link to the live chat. For a more leisurely but less interactive experience, plug in Declined Estate on iTunes. And if there's a topic you want to hear discussed on a later show, please submit to r/declinedestate@reddit.com. As always, links to both our live stream and archive episodes can be found at declinefm.com. And r/declinedestate@reddit.com. I'm Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of the Silicon Valley. We have a number of fascinating topics today. We think you're going to enjoy it. And I think you guys noticed the new intro music, eh? I'm joined by my handsome co-casters, and I'll let them go around the horn and introduce themselves now.
Hey, hello. Wrong Opinion here, now with 100% more band.
Hi guys, this is Eternal here. How you guys all
doing? Good.
This is Kwashi Orkar. Welcome to the 1st of August.
This is Rotto from Rotto.com, broadcasting from the heart of the Silicon Valley. Whatever Ronald McCall might say, notwithstanding.
Let's go with like northern-ish, northern Silicon Valley, I think.
It's all California to me.
Tension among the ranks.
We are in the state of Taxifornia.
It's like the second worst state next to the state of confusion.
We are
or state of disarray.
Yeah, we were always in the top five of all those lists of the worst, least hospitable business climate states, along with New York's always there, some other misanthropes.
I always like to refer to it as the People's Republic of Commifornia. Myself.
What do you mean, California? We have weed. That couldn't possibly be compatible with a state that is communist, right?
I think it could be.
Oh, gotta have your soma, right?
Yeah, it's just you guys just don't understand what kind of waves we got going on here, brah.
Hey, speaking of communism, I got a little tidbit here about some controversy going on over in Hong Kong. You guys want to hear about that?
Go ahead.
All right, so apparently there's some controversy because some pro-communism groups are pushing to have Chinese patriotism classes taught in schools in Hong Kong. There's even word of little brochures being passed out and whatnot, and certain authorities having ties to the Communist Party and Greater China, I guess you would say. Of course, for those of you who aren't as familiar with the relationship between Hong Kong and China as a whole, Hong Kong was actually a protectorate of the British Empire for some time and was handed over to China about 10 years ago. And they've been slowly reintegrated over time. The people in Hong Kong would rather their children be brainwashed to accept democracy than brainwashed to accept communism. So they've got tens of thousands of parents rolling around in neighborhoods with some of their youngest children in strollers going around and informing the locals about what's going on here. Any thoughts on that?
Well, go ahead first. Yeah.
Well, like you said, it's the brainwashing of they're fearing the communism as opposed to the brainwashing of the democracy. And it's true, no one said anything about, the educational system that was imposed by the UK over Hong Kong for like 100 years. And the people didn't have a choice about, what kind of system was there. They had to live under it. And it was basically a benevolent dictatorship under the governor, or a series of governors that were there, but as Hong Kong was about to be handed over to Red China, they built up the whole, you know, oh, this is a democratic country, and the, you know, then became, you know, the big push for democratic institutions and principles and fear mongering against the Red Chinese. You know, there was a lot of fear that the you know, the soldiers were going to march in and take over, and there'd be a huge crackdown, you know, at the point of the handover, which I think was in 94, 95. And, you know, anybody that had money, people were trying to get out of the country. There were a lot of people moving to Canada. Those who had dual citizenship in the UK, you know, would try to go to any of the other British Commonwealth countries. But there was a lot of fear, and that didn't really happen. China saw the value in keeping Hong Kong as a relatively free market. And, you know, so I wonder how much of this is, the Communist Party wants to push their indoctrination. They always have. But I don't know how much of this is more fear-mongering as opposed to real concerns about, you know, I know there are private schools in Hong Kong, so, you know, why aren't people considering the alternatives?
I think something that's should be pointed out, especially from the point of view of persons like us, is that this is really a false choice. They're making a false choice between democracy, which I might point out is capable of being communistic, and one-party communism, which is what the rest of China has. But either way, they're still choosing statism. They're still choosing violence. And Hong Kong is a beacon of economic power in that region of the world. It's kind of disappointing that they haven't chosen something a little bit closer to a complete free market, a voluntary market, because they could probably get away with it with all the economic power and influence that they have.
Oh, they could, absolutely. And you know, their tax rate, the personal tax rate, I think is like 15% or something. And there's no, I believe there's like still no corporate income tax. I could be wrong on that. But, you know, compared to mainland China, where the rates are 45%, I think for most people, it's a huge difference, you know. And there's still a lot of people from mainland China trying to get into Hong Kong. But you're right. They could be standing up and saying, you know, we're going to run our own stuff. We're going to control our own schools. But, you know, frankly, the Legislative Council doesn't have that much power. Things are still decided in mainland China. You know, so, yeah, there is the fear they're gradually losing their rights. But, yeah, they've got a lot of economic power. They could be standing up for themselves.
I don't know, man. As a resident of the state of California, I would love to get in on that action, you know? 15% tax sounds pretty good to me. I mean, it would sound better if it was 0%, but still, you know, 15% tax. And so that's the very thing that has allowed Hong Kong to demonstrate in a very, very compelling manner that the free market actually does work, that the peaceful market works, and that people working together in peaceful cooperation actually do get to a better result than people working in a coercive state.
If you could ever see the pictures, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and people don't realize, because, I mean, a lot of us weren't alive back in the day. You know, it was, what, 50 years ago or something that Hong Kong was just basically a ragtag village port. There wasn't really much there. It had a good location, you know. Location, yeah, that matters a lot. But you need the free market so that can matter. And what happened is Hong Kong just exploded in the latter half of the 20th century. I mean, it went from literally dirt poor, nothing, to a major world economic power and like one of the biggest financial markets. They're huge. And of course, I also got to take a few seconds to plug while we're talking about, you know, schools in general. Because this, you know, that's all what we're talking about here right now. We talked about this on Sunday, 2 weeks in a row. The Decline to State, episodes 6 and 7 are up in the archives. We talked a lot about education, public education, solutions for education. So, you know, all you guys, if you haven't listened to it, check it out. It's some good stuff. Done plugging ourselves now.
Well, I can tell you one thing. If they are afraid of, if people are afraid in Hong Kong or in China in general of getting Chinese patriotism in school, there's not that much they can do unless they choose to opt out, and even if it's possible. I would say that their fears are completely justified, right? Because patriotism, what is patriotism? You guys tell me what patriotism is.
Well, it's an irrational ethical value. Well, maybe not irrational, but incorrect ethical value placed on a country of origin or a state or a government or some other kind of thing like that.
I agree with you. It's completely true. I would summarize patriotism to be something that's like what I'm going to say. Something similar to what I'm going to say. It's basically the people that were born in my turf, which I didn't choose to be born in, are better than the people who were born in that other turf, separated by an imaginary line. That's patriotism in a nutshell, isn't it?
Patriotism is you're not going to tell me and I can't put up my flag and listen to the music I want to listen to.
I love Bizarro Quash.
Eternal looks a little bit itchy over there.
Oh, no, I got him what I was going to say. I was just trying to plug our show, man.
Oh, okay. Good stuff. I thought you had something extra.
Well, I mean, in general, like when we're talking about, you know, patriotism, it's important to remember, like, what we do in our schools here is pretty jingoistic and ridiculous, too. We have this wonderful thing called the Pledge of Allegiance, which is, you know, we're going to salute the flag and dedicate our allegiance to the United States of America. You know, it's got the word state right in there, of course. And, you know, like, the whole thing is incredibly nationalistic. And think about all our history and government classes that we take.
Uh-oh, do we
America lose saves them? America saves the day.
Oh, we're back.
What do you mean to say the United States of America isn't a thing? It's a thing. Look around. The imaginary lines demarcate that thing, right? Right? Right?
Well, I mean, I do understand when people say that America, you know, when they talk about America, they're really talking about the ideas of the founding fathers, the idea of more of a self-governance, rule of law, no kings, that kind of thing. They're talking about the principles upon which the country is founded, but that's been distorted. And nowadays, when people talk about America, they don't talk about principle. They're not referring to the country as an idea. They're referring to the country as this nation of arbitrary boundaries and people that have really nothing to do with each other. Like Texas has nothing to do with Maine, has nothing to do with North Dakota, has nothing to do with California. I mean, they're all just completely different places. They have different climates, different people, different value systems of the people there. And of course, people are individuals too, but yeah, they're like basically separate nations in Europe or states in America. So what the heck are they united about other than this common idea, which is long dead, of limited government and freedom?
Well, even the state lines are arbitrary. I mean, look at the differences between North and South California, Northern and Southern California, or the UP of Michigan versus the rest of the state. There are a lot of political and cultural differences. Think of different parts of Florida. You know, a lot of the people, you know, you wouldn't, if you threw them in a room together, they wouldn't get to, you know, they sure wouldn't see eye to eye. You know, Texas is a huge state, sure, but you know, or look at some of the other Western states where they've got, you know, large Native American populations and that don't even really participate in the American political process. So there's a lot of arbitrary lines that are drawn, and there's no consideration of that. And there's no hope for redrawing those lines under our current laws either. So there are people that are basically forced to be together, you know, just like in a lot of European states. And they've got they're forced by the rest of the world to live together and to put up with each other and not be able to separate to form their own, you know, kind of living arrangements or their own governments that they would want to. And that's, again, the power of force of governments that wants to, make people live under its rules rather than allow them to be self-governing.
Right.
Going back to Hong Kong, you've got the situation where, you know, the people lived so long under, you know, Great Britain that they were, you know, in one sense encouraged to think of themselves as UK citizens. And then they were left, you know, kind of rudderless, you know. So now who are we? Are we Are we Chinese? Are we our own country? What are we? You know? And I think a lot of them just threw themselves into free enterprise. You know, that's what their business was. That's what their identity was. And that also contributed to the growth. You know, looking, you guys were mentioning the growth of Hong Kong. I've seen postcards from, 75, 100 years ago, and it really was a bunch of, like, sailed junk vessels. They called them junks, little shacks, little hotels, wheeled carts that were pulled around by people, manpower. And, in a very short amount of time, a huge city was built, one of the most advanced cities in the country. And, so that could happen again if free markets were truly allowed to happen. I think there's great opportunity of us seeing a real modern civilization being built if we could get the chance.
I definitely agree with that. And, we talk about other places like Hong Kong as if they're like the bastions of freedom, but America still is pretty good. There's still a lot of opportunity here. I'm looking at a Forbes magazine article here, America's Most Surprising Six-Figure Jobs. And I know a lot of us, especially younger people, look at the six-figure job as like this golden, the holy grail of, being the American dream, the holy grail of working life. You haven't made if you get a six-figure job. And there's 20 of these, which were put out as, not maybe the first things that come to mind as a six-figure job. Like, I know when people think of six figures or better, they might be thinking of something like President of the United States or, big-time stockbroker. Someone who just, emanates the aura of wealth and prosperity from them. It's kind of sad that I had to put President of the United States in there, but, it is what it is. And, nowadays we have other things like loan officers, database administrators, film and video editors, captains of water vessels, for instance. And these are, definitely not your first choice for, oh man, these guys are going to make it big. They're going to make tons of money. And yet a lot of them do make over six figures. However, as a caveat, the way they did this list is the top 10% of these professionals earn more than $100,000 a year. That doesn't really say how most people, the median income for these professions go. Because I know that, obviously if you're a makeup artist or in theater and performance, you probably do pretty well if you get to work on like TV shows and Broadway and stuff, if you get a really good job. But only 10% of the people actually get real jobs. A lot of them have no employment whatsoever. There's not a lot of demand for it. So the people that do get hired get paid pretty well. People that don't get hired get paid nothing. So your median's going to be a heck of a lot lower than your 10%.
Well, there's a solution for that problem, right? That's a pretty easy solution that the state can take. The state can always do, provide us with great solutions to the problems. And hereby, I announce that the state should immediately, ipso facto, instantaneously, raise the minimum wage to $50 an hour. And to prevent unemployment, because, it could happen if they raise the minimum wage to $50 an hour, they could make unemployment illegal, right? It'll mean so much money for the prison industry, right?
Dude, you don't get my ideas. Don't get many ideas. They might actually do it. I've seen worse suggested by people. It's pretty sad.
If we make unemployment illegal.
Yeah, you make unemployment illegal. You ban being poor. No, you're no longer allowed to be poor. Poverty solved, guys. We're good.
Well, they already banned feeding the homeless. So why not just put them in a cage already, right? What are we waiting for?
Philadelphia or something? You're no longer allowed to feed homeless
It's not just Philadelphia. It's also in several cities in Florida, in several cities across the U.S. It's illegal to feed the people who are hungry that don't have a home.
Instead of putting up signs that say "Don't feed the homeless," you should put up signs "Don't feed the state."
That'd be pretty clever. Yeah. Why is it wrong when I feed homeless people, but it's okay for the government to feed homeless people? after they put them in a cage.
That'd be great. Like, do some activism, just wear some signs and like, don't feed the.
Well, it's
mainly
very easy
to dependency.
It's very easy to understand why it's illegal for you to feed the homeless, but not for the state to feed the homeless. You are not the government, right?
Well, depends on your point of view there, doesn't it?
Yeah. yes, it definitely does.
Yeah, you're distributing wealth in unpredictable ways. They don't know how to, like, recompensate for you moving money around. Only they get to do that.
Well, anyways, getting back to, you know, the whole six-figure jobs thing, I feel like some of these jobs are pretty good as very stable, conservative career choices. Low risk.
Arbitrator on the list, which I liked.
Database administrators. Everyone knows that sysadmins are like the king of king. They have a great job. They don't even have to wear like pants, and you get paid six figures to do just database work. It's good.
It's actually pretty good money, yeah. For to be a database admin. To be honest, the whole "I make a lot of money" thing happens when you have to manage thousands of machines or hundreds of machines. That's when it happens. If you have to manage like a couple of machines. And that this actually is like the 99 percentile of all the jobs, or basically almost all the jobs that are in the computer industry, when you're actually talking about managing machines or databases, it's not that very well paid. It is significantly better paid than, for example, a school teacher, and I think it's deservedly so, but that's just my personal opinion. I have no idea.
Do you even need a four-year degree to do it? Like, or
you don't.
Can you just go in with just technical knowledge?
If you have a resume that will prove that you can do the job, you will get hired. Even if they post, something that says, 5-year degree required, master's degree required, something like that, doesn't matter. If you go and post your own resume and you have experience to back up your knowledge, you're good.
I changed the backup tapes in the database room, and after that, I spend the rest of my time posting on Dig.
What's Dig? I never heard of it.
Yeah, what is that?
It was something like Reddit, but it was destroyed by EPS trolls and their own management.
Oh yeah.
That's the story.
Anyways,
that's the story. Yeah.
So what I want to know is what kind of a body of water do you have to be on to get a six-figure salary to be the pilot of a water vessel?
I don't know about that one, but I assume that means like if you're the captain or pilot of like a fishing boat,
the love
or,
boat,
or a cruise liner, which is basically like a love boat pretty much for senior citizens, and or maybe like an oil tanker. I mean, you're probably gonna make a lot of money. You're responsible for like several thousand all the way up to $1 billion piece of equipment.
Yeah,
I'm going to pay you pretty
well.
I think it would be pretty fun. Though, of course, you could be like, what was that? I forgot what the cruise line was. Remember the thing, the cruise ship that crashed in like Italy or something earlier?
It was a couple of Concordia, right?
Yeah.
That was a pretty big failboat.
Right.
What about this one? There's where'd it go? The elevator, what did it say? I lost it. Elevator installers and repairers. I mean, I'm surprised to see that on the list. Of course, I always wanted to be an elevator operator. You know, these guys that would like, you know, you'd pull the lever, you know, in the old days, and the elevator would go from floor to floor, and you'd announce what was on the floor. But the technology put those guys out of business. It's pretty sad. You know, we need minimum wage, and we need to restore those jobs, and they should have protected them. It's so sad.
And who's going to protect the buggy and carriage industry? Who the hell is going to do that? These people gave their lives learning
how to
man a horse, right?
Rickshaw.
We need rickshaw drivers.
Well, it's too late now because of the lack of regulation. That industry got completely exported to Amish country.
You are such a troll.
Oh, that's great.
It's
yeah,
true.
There's a couple in here that are, I think, there's a couple on this list also that I feel that really should not be here. Like, what the heck is an art director doing on, or like, makeup artists, art directors, writers, and authors.
I imagine they're involved with Hollywood in some fashion.
Those are for porno sets.
They're just probably laundering
money. Resource
manager. Yeah, let's be fair. Art director, they're laundering money. That's what they're doing.
Probably. I mean, most of the... I would... This is my own personal advice to people. But if you're looking at going into one of these careers, make sure you're damn good or damn well connected or both. Because, you know, you're not going to make it more likely than not. It's simply a numbers game. Like, it's not something like an engineering degree where the average person does pretty damn well. And even if you're okay, you're doing good. You have to excel. You really do have to excel in these fields. I feel like if people want to take more conservative approaches to making good money, the trades, electrician, plumbing, blacksmithing, mechanic work, you can make a lot of money, especially if you start up your own business. You can make a ton of money. And you know it doesn't take that much schooling. I mean, it's like 2 years for the trade degree and you get some certifications. That's about it.
I think we need more transportation inspectors.
You know what you can make a lot of money off from, and I'm not being facetious, I'm being serious. Buying shit and selling shit. If you can buy stuff at a great price and you can sell the stuff at a great price for you, you're going to make a lot of money. It's a
question
of volume.
It's funny you should mention that because farmers, ranchers, and agricultural managers are on the list, and I'm sure inside that profession there are people who actually do specialize in buying and selling shit.
It makes sense, of course. I mean, literally shit, of course.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah. You know, fertilizer.
Couch.
I tried that. I ended up with a garage full of tongue scrapers. It just didn't work out for me.
What?
I don't think he's serious, dude.
I was hoping that he was, because that sounded like it would have been a good story.
Well, you can always compost them or sell them in Amazon or eBay.
I got to rebrand them as something else. I just got to figure out, you know, what else could a tongue scraper serve as? You know, some new technology function. I don't know. Maybe
a midget back scratcher.
An iPhone screen cleaner. I don't know. For those really dirty iPhone screens.
Oh, hell yeah. Man. If you sell it to hipsters, they will buy. Sell it to hipsters. They will buy.
And they'll stop buying as soon as it becomes popular.
It goes out of trend that fast. You gotta be. It's all into timing, you know. You gotta be,
on
the
edge,
right,
man.
Time. Yeah.
The hipsters are kind of like market predictors in a way, though, because if you create something and it becomes popular amongst hipsters, you can be pretty sure that after a certain amount of time, it'll catch on in the mainstream. And then you can really sell out and make a ton of money. And it doesn't matter if you piss off the hipsters because now you've got the big market.
Very true. Very, 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 very true.
There's some economics there for you. That's hipster economics.
Well, I don't know. It depends on the kind of hipster, right? If you can go and buy, say, a t-shirt for like $3, you can consider yourself a hipster. If, on the other hand, you can go and buy a t-shirt that is being pre-ripped for $1,600, unfortunately, you can also consider yourself a hipster these days. That's very sad.
Yeah. Sign of the times, man.
I see gaming managers are on the list, too. I think that's referring to, you know, like casino operators, managers.
Is that what
managers
that means?
Or something? I think I saw that in one of the details. Yeah.
Okay.
So that'd be a fun job. That would, you know, walk around the casino looking for people cheating and, you know, pointing out you know, the opportune machines that people should go to. You know, oh, this one hasn't hit for a while, and you know, you get tips and everything. So that might be a fun job.
Yeah. You know, a casino recently opened up nearby me. Thinking about going and checking it out. I'm told that it's mostly filled with people blowing their social security checks. I thought it would be interesting to go and see how old people are spending my money.
This is Decline to State. We'll be right back after a short
break.
Your might.
Hello?
Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Harkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. We're going to California and Texas and New York. We're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Yeah! That's great.
All right, welcome back to the Decline to State, the number one show among ANCAP hipsters all over the world. Might be a good opportunity to remind people that we have a book raffle going on for callers. We're going to be giving away a copy of Everything Voluntary. So if you call, you will be automatically entered. So make sure you stay on and give us your information. I got a great article for you guys from a very reputable tech site. This one comes from The Verge. And this one is about the U.S. cell phone carriers. So I know you all have a personal and intimate relationship with these enterprises. This one's called 5 years after the iPhone, carriers are the biggest threat to innovation. And let's jump right in. It's written pretty well. At least it gets the ball rolling for us. 5 years ago, the iPhone revolutionized the mobile business and kicked off a seismic shift in the technology industry that continues today. But the massive success of Apple's phone has overshadowed the grim reality of an American wireless marketplace that has become increasingly hostile to innovation. A market tightly controlled by carriers who capriciously pick winners and losers while raising prices and insisting that their use of valuable public spectrum remain free of any oversight. While the iPhone is a raging success, the wireless market is headed towards total failure. I go on. The evidence is everywhere. Starting with the iPhone itself, Verizon famously passed on the device at first, and if not for Steve Jobs personally convincing AT&T to sell his phone, sight unseen, the iPhone may have never existed. Jobs was well aware that he couldn't reach the market of cell phone consumers without carrier support. At the D3 conference, he famously called the carriers orifices. I like that. And offered this withering assessment of the industry as it then stood. It's even worse. The carriers have gained the upper hand in terms of the power in the relationship with the handset manufacturers, and they're starting to tell the handset manufacturers what to build. And if Nokia and Motorola don't listen to them, well, Samsung and LG will. So the handset manufacturers are really getting these big, thick books from carriers telling them, here's what your phone's going to be. That sounds frustrating to me from a phone producer point of view. It's not the whole article, but if you guys have any thoughts, if that boils your blood, you can let me know, or I can dabble in a couple other parts of this.
Well, keep on going.
All right. So Steve Jobs went on. So he goes, "We're not good at that," Steve added. 2 years later, he would ship the iPhone, turning the industry on its head. Apple had succeeded in building the phone customers wanted instead of the phone carriers wanted, and things would never be the same.
Ah, there we go. See, that's the thing, isn't it? The wireless industry had been kind of languishing for a while with a bunch of random crappy phones that were attractive to carriers but not to customers, right? Then Steve Jobs comes along, and he makes something that the customers actually want. And as history shows, the iPhone exploded onto the market. It, you know, like the article says, it completely changed everything. And now we're at the point where if some of you guys keep up on the tech sector in any manner, you're probably aware of the patent wars that are going on in the phone industry now because people are copying each other's successes, especially Apple's. Apple is going after Samsung for supposedly copying some of their ideas as these things go.
It's disgusting. I think
so. We see how the tables turn whenever the customers become served.
Yeah, I think you're, and those are good examples you've given, because I think you see Samsung and and Apple are always in battles, it seems like, not even in just in U.S. courts, but if you can't scan the newspaper without seeing something about, in you know, patent law or anti-monopoly law, maybe not anti-monopoly for this, but, you know, all over the world. And I think with the new phone, the new hotness from Samsung, the Galaxy S3, it's you know, it's one people facetiously, in part, say that it was designed by IP lawyers because apparently Apple had patented the curve or the square shape, so they had to curve it.
There was somewhere you could patent shapes, man. That's crazy. Yeah, so you know, for all your listeners, if you want to join in the conversation, please do not hesitate to call into Skype. That's user decline2state, decline2state, one word, and we would love to have you on the show. Talk about, you know, whatever you want, but, you know, talk about U.S. cell phone carriers and what cell phone you have. Let's hear what cell phones you got and what you like on your cell phones and what policies you really like. Rail on your carriers. That's what this show should be about, railing on your carrier. So go ahead and do that. And you can also ask questions in the IRC. That's found at declinefm.com/live. We can listen to the live stream of the show. And we will take questions from the IRC as we see them. So please do not hesitate to participate in the conversation here.
Might get a free book after all.
Absolutely. By the way, I got yesterday, and it was very interesting. It's a beautiful, beautiful phone, and it's fast as hell. It's the fastest phone ever made. Everything was buttery smooth. Nothing malfunctioned. The phone was an amazing piece of machinery. And Samsung may or may not have eluded or evaded the patent trolls that were chasing it, right? However, the phone was incredibly, incredibly well made. And, you know, I'm really sad that the phone that I bought was not actually black. I really wanted a black phone. Apparently, that was part of the deal, you know, not getting a black phone. But there was one problem, and this problem actually traces back to the same old stuff that all carriers in the U.S. have. The technology that they use, because of, you know, intellectual property, cannot actually be used in the rest of the world because they have agreed this is what they're going to do. So they have to have a version of the phone that is for the U.S. and another version of the phone that is for the rest of the planet. And this is very unfortunate. Because I bought the version of the phone that was available, which was the version of the phone for the rest of the planet. And so I didn't actually get 3G speeds. Not 4G, not even 3G, 2G speeds, edge. So I had to return it. But imagine that. Imagine if I could actually buy a phone because of these stupid policies, these stupid laws that don't allow me to, ultimately don't allow me to get a phone that I can use everywhere. Right? Imagine if I could get this phone and buy it anywhere in the world and use it anywhere in the world in exactly the way that it's supposed to be. Right? I could use it everywhere. I wouldn't have to care. But no, I had to return it. That's very sad. I feel really, really cheated.
Well, the governments want to control access. I mean, it starts with the bandwidth. They sell limited bandwidth space to the carriers who in turn, you know, lock you into a service contract. You can't move from area to area or service to service without paying, you know, ridiculous, you know, non-network fees. You know, that's within the right as companies, but we don't have a real competition situation. And I think the carriers now are afraid as the phones get fancier, it's going to be more expensive for them because the people are going to want more bandwidth. The phones are going to want to pull more bandwidth down. And it's the carriers who are going to have to like tell people, no, sorry, we don't want to give you that much bandwidth or we're going to charge you more. So they won't want to tell people that. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to force the phone manufacturers to give the appearance of great functionality and great bandwidth, but they're really not providing bandwidth. You know, they're providing like really fast in bursts of speed, you know, that you still have to end up waiting for, you know, so certain things will come really fast and other things will take forever. And, you know, it plays into the government's hands if it makes it easier to manage things through fewer channels of data to go through, you know, so you'll have it'll make it that easier for the president to come on and say, thank you all for listening and supporting, and here's an emergency special announcement that you need to hear, you know, or whatever it is. They want to push messages down to you. And, you know, ultimately it's a control issue, you know. So, you know, what we need to do is free up the bandwidth, open it up to real competition. You know, we need to get away from IP so that we're not locked into phone designs, so that we'd be able to return to, you know, a real competitive situation again. And I don't know what's going to move us there. The public, I think, is going to have to demand it at some point, but. I'm ranting now. So, what is there? Do you have something else, Mr. McBall, from the article?
Oh man, I was.
I think there's a rant from Eternal that we got blow
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I got a bit of a brewing rant here. I also hear a train in the background. Your trains are acting up, bro. You got a case of
train. That's the Reddit Karma train you're hearing.
Choo choo, all aboard.
Going in the opposite direction.
Ron Paul is conducting. Also Sagan.
Yeah. So, you know, I was listening to you talk about, like, the emergency system. So it's exactly like what's out of V for Vendetta. Remember when he gets on the emergency broadcast system at the beginning of the movie? It feels like exactly like that, and it's creeping me out pretty bad.
Oh,
I
don't
want to talk about that stuff.
I just rewatched that movie recently. It's
such a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good one. It gets you in it.
Yeah, best piece of the 1812 Overture ever.
Definitely. Definitely, it's fantastic. But when we talk about cell phones, and you're talking about freeing up spectrum, I'll talk about stuff from my personal knowledge and research that I've done, because I have some experience in the area. A big problem with the way spectrum, the reason why, you know, there's not a lot of spectrum available is, one, the U.S. government eats up like 80% of it, which is terrible, and you know, on top of that, we have the way they do spectrum auctions. Sorry about that. Is they take a huge chunk of land, a huge geographical area, and they divide it all up into little tiny bandwidths, like, you know, a few kilohertz, basically not enough to do anything serious. And you have to buy a whole region. When you go and buy spectrum, and you need to buy a huge amount of adjacent bands so you can actually function with reasonable technology. So what's going on right now is only the big guys can compete. The little guys can't buy up spectrum just for like their town. You can't have a you know, local cell phone company pop up just for like one or two towns in a small region, even though it'd be very easy to do so technologically, and you just hook into the same backbone of bigger networks if you wanted to. It wouldn't be hard to do that, but you can't buy the spectrum. I mean, it costs way, way, way too much. And there's a couple of solutions for that. One of which, of course, is just enabling people to trade spectrum in whatever chunks they want. And you can do so through like a spectrum market, kind of like the stock market.
Whoa, and you can have futures and everything. That sounds kind of peaceful.
Yeah, I know. Voluntary trade and private markets solve this problem so easily. And it's something that's been suggested in a serious academic sense. And of course, you know, who hates it the most? The major, you know, cell companies probably really hate it, but the regulators really hate it. And the government doesn't like it. They don't like the idea of, you know, people being able to operate outside the sphere of government where, you know, political favor reigns supreme, takes away their power. And so I don't think that will ever occur until the market steps up and just starts doing it on their own. In some sort of agorist fashion. You know, maybe the bidding can be done with bitcoins. It can be done completely, you know, anonymous, and you just, you know, buy up and share spectrum on a black market. It'd be kind of cool. And certainly it would get rid of a lot of these problems with, you know, I buy up a ton of spectrum in this huge region, but I only need it for the city. I don't need it. I don't need all the spectrum for like the countryside and the highways. There aren't enough people. They don't fill it up. So I have this extra spectrum sitting there and I paid way too much for it. So it definitely will cut down the cost considerably. And I did some personal research on this and the savings are orders of magnitude. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars down to hundreds of thousands of dollars for the spectrum license. It's absolutely absurd. How much it costs now compared to what it should cost at a market rate.
Yeah, we need a license to use this part of the spectrum. I am surprised that the government actually hasn't started selling licenses for people to speak in the audible spectrum. I'm amazed.
And correct me if I'm wrong on this, guys, but my understanding, too, was that for parts of the spectrum, too, they have an equivalent to eminent domain. You know, eminent domain being the rule where you can take actual physical property if the government decides, or if someone, you know, a bureaucrat or someone from the state decides, this is necessary for public use. We need it for roads, essentially. I guess I heard they can do that with actual, you know, audio spectrum and say, oh, you're using that? That's okay, little guy. We actually might need it for X and X connected interest. Well,
I don't think they can do it willy-nilly, but it's something the military would do it. Because think, if we're engaged in military action, there's frequencies and communication techniques that are hidden until military action is needed, until live conflict. They keep a lot of systems hidden.
Isn't it enough, all the frequencies that they already have? Isn't it enough? They have to take over the frequencies that people who are peaceful and don't kill human beings are using? Well, really?
Yeah, I mean, this is a problem when you have a monopoly on defense. We don't have a respect for property rights at all. And it's all the idea that, well, property rights are important until we say they're not. And there's this strange double standard of, we need to defend you, so we have to take your property rights. We have to invade upon, you know, things you've even paid us for. We have to renege on our agreements, and we're going to take your stuff.
It's and the good old
course,
double
it's
standard,
all
yeah.
To protect your stuff. We're doing it for your protection.
Yes.
It's literally as insane as, you know, a cop going up and beating you in the face and saying, this is for your own protection, this is for your own protection. I mean, it's the same type of thing. It's the use of violent force to deprive you of, you know, your life, your possession, product of your labor, and all for your protection.
No, you're right. That is insane. That is absolutely insane.
It's kind of sad. You know, Ronald, if I may interject for a moment, it's kind of sad that we live in a world where sanity is accepting the rule that some norm prevails, except when a person or a group of people say, no, this rule doesn't prevail anymore, sorry, you're fucked. And insanity is demanding that the rule be applied to everybody without exception. Isn't that crazy? Just fucking insane?
Yeah. And from what this article says, if you go down a little bit farther, that it's not only the little guys like we were talking about, which is kind of the usual, you know, collateral damage from these kind of things, but even the big guys are. I'll jump ahead to like one little segment more. They said the author goes on to say that even powerful and established companies like Google and Microsoft are now avoiding the carriers as they scramble to compete with Apple. Microsoft is radically appending the entire PC markets with its Surface tablets, but they're Wi-Fi only for now. And Redmond refuses to discuss carrier partnerships. Same with Google, which just announced the Nexus 7 tablet. It's designed for on-the-go content consumption, but it lacks a mobile broadband connection. Google won't comment about the 4G version of the Nexus 7 on record, but it's fair to say relations between a search giant and carriers are strained. Multiple sources say that Verizon purposely delayed shipment on the LTE Galaxy Nexus after announcing that the Motorola Droid Razr, forcing Google to send U.S. journalists unlocked HSPA Plus review units to be used on AT&T when the phone launched internationally. And then here's a kicker, guys. And when Verizon did eventually release the Nexus, it was stripped of Google's wallet functionality, forestalling the growth of Google's mobile payment system, while Verizon works on its own solution.
Very nice, Verizon. Very nice. I'm sure you're gonna make a lot of money out of your idiotic decision.
Yeah, they're gonna do it better than Google, I'm sure.
Yes, of course, absolutely. Anytime, we're just waiting for that to happen, right? By the way, I'm not sure if you guys are aware of, But Google has come up with a solution, you know, for broadband. And it used an entirely democratic process, of course, a voluntary democratic process to decide who is going to get it. And Kansas City, of all places in the U.S., Kansas City is getting it. Everybody is getting Google Fiber. That's the name of the product. And they're basically selling for real cheap, like for $80. A gigabit. Gigabit bandwidth up and down to the internet.
Let's move there.
Oh my God, I'm just like, oh my God, we have to move to Kansas City. And my girlfriend said, no, we can't do that. We cannot do that.
Let's get out of California. No, I have not heard the best things about that city's entertainment value, but gigabit, you said gigabit or eight, or what was the value up and down?
Gigabit up and down.
Gigabit down. Simultaneously, and with all the TV channels that you can imagine in the bundle. They don't get you, you know, like the premium and standard and this package and that package and the porn package. No, everything. Everything on a single package. And they give you a DVR, and they give you bandwidth, and they give you basically everything. And you can actually use your tablet to watch. It's like a wireless router. You can watch the same movie that you were watching on your TV. You say, all right, honey, you can use the TV now. I'm going to watch, you know, I'm going to go to the restroom and sit down for a second, and I'm going to watch the movie that I was watching here, and you can continue watching whatever you want. You move the show that you're watching from your TV into your tablet, and they're giving you a free Nexus 7 when you do this purchase. And the Nexus 7 is also a remote for the TV. How about that?
Well, I want to know what they need all that bandwidth for in Kansas City. You know, what are they doing out there? I mean, I'm imagining it's like, Maybelle, I need to know what them hog prices are right now. You know, and I'm trying to find it up, but it's not coming up too fast. So, what are they, you know, why'd they pick Kansas City?
Kansas City was probably picked for several reasons. The first reason is it's the city that got the most responses to Google survey. So everybody was interested there. And the second thing is it's probably because Kansas City, due to the topology of the city, and it basically, they're talking Kansas City in two states, right? Not just in the state of Kansas, but in the other state that's neighboring to it, right? It's because it's easy. The mayors actually were on board, you know, with the program. And they said, you know, yeah, we'll give you the permits to do the things that you need to do to actually install Google Fiber everywhere. So it is a political decision, but it's also a democratic decision in that sense. And to determine the order in which they would install Google Fiber, they talked to the people of Kansas saying, you know, we're going to divide the city in this, you know, in this structure, and we're going to divide it in neighborhoods, and the neighborhood that gets the most votes, the most interest, most pre-sign-ups, sorry, not English speaker here, basically gets Google Fiber first. So we'll proceed in that order.
I'm going to be at the bottom of the list out here in this little town, man. It's terrible. It's just going to be forever.
Don't worry about it. But, of course, Google sweetened the deal by providing free internet access, gigabit access, to libraries and police stations, oh my God, and other public services operated by the state. Of course, the mayor gets free gigabit internet, of course. Just make it's given, course. Right?
Then more jobs.
I'm looking at a gigabit internet up and down? How can you possibly use that as an individual? I mean,
it's pretty easy. They give you.
So what I'm working with right now, I have Verizon Fios at my place, and I got the 50/25. So 50 megabits down, 25 up. It's fantastic. Costs a good, pretty penny, but not too much more than that Google stuff.
Well, and they demoed it, right? So what they do is, say you film a video with your video camera, right? And then you want to collaborate with somebody else in, you know, editing this video. And this video is like half a gig. So you normally have to compress the video and send it over the internet in bad quality so you can actually get the video on the other side, to the other side in a reasonable amount of time. Not so. You just upload it to your Google Drive. They give you, I'm shitting you not, in the bundle you get a terabyte of disk space in the Google Drive. And so you copy it to your Google Drive, and that's it. And it takes like 30 seconds, 40 seconds. That's it. Your video is uploaded. That's it.
Yo, do you realize most people can't use that gigabit connection? They can't. Their machines probably don't have gigabit Ethernet. Most machines probably only go to 100 megabit Ethernet.
That's probably true.
And the routers. You need special equipment and a special card to even get anything out of that. So it sounds really cool and fancy, but it's actually ahead of the curve on the technology spectrum. Like, it's so far beyond what people are used to that the technology on the user end is just not there yet. It's pretty fun.
Well, I can't wait for the 3D live group chat sessions. It'll be great.
Yes, chat.
Nah, I don't like that. It'll, you know, show all my imperfections in my face.
You don't have any imperfections. Stop it.
I'm worried that everyone will be distracted by my perfect Adonis visage.
Does this chat make my ass look bad?
No, your adjust ass your glasses. Makes your ass look big.
I think it's absolutely fantastic that they're trying to roll something out that's so, you know, beyond what's out there on the market today. I think it might be a little overkill because, of course, you know, you need technology. You need to buy a whole new technology just to get the use out of the gigabit. But, you know, it's still going to be up to what I guess like 100 megabit connection for anything else you have with the standard technology that's out nowadays. That's still fantastic.
Let's be fair. If you want to upgrade to a gigabit connection and your machine can't handle it, all you have to do is really buy a network card. And the network card's like a $9 a piece, right? So if you know how to install it, good. If you don't have to install it, you buy the $10 network card and you pay your neighbor $10 to install it. And you're good to go, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a huge investment, but yeah, a little bit. The biggest investment probably is going to be your router. Unless they give you one.
Well, they give you a router, of course.
They do give you one?
Yeah, of course. It's part of the deal. They give you a router, and the router has wireless and wired connections.
Yeah. I don't know. You can't even get close to the gigabit speed on wireless, though. You have to wire in. Like, what does 802.11n get? Like, 40 megabits?
No, you're not doing... No, it's actually, like, 200 megabit right now. So, yeah, 200 megabits. 212, something like that. Yeah, they give you this router, of course. It's capable of doing that, right?
That's your max throughput. You're probably going to get a lot less than that, but that's still fantastic. I didn't realize it was that good.
It is good enough for you to take your tablet and continue watching HD, full HD, highest quality HD anywhere in your house. That's good enough.
Oh, yeah. I already can do on this connection, like, do this radio show while my roommate's watching, you know, HD TV. Well, and probably has, like, you know, streaming videos on his computer in HD quality. It's amazing what you can do nowadays. I just remember back in the day when, you know, the internet was emerging in the 90s. You know, you had dial-up, and you're like, oh, man, I have to download a file? Hold on, I can't take calls for an hour.
Interestingly, in the video that I saw introducing Google Fiber, they made an amazing graphical allegory to exactly that. I know that I can't share this with you know, our listeners, but I will share it with you guys later on. And the video is amazing. The first 5 minutes, you're gonna love it.
Yeah, I, you know, I think I've only got like 64, you know, bits bandwidth. It's just awful here. In fact, I don't even have enough bandwidth to do the show. I've got to buffer it in advance just to get everything to go through correctly.
Really?
Yeah, I've got to talk. I'm actually talking in the future, you know, anticipating what's going to be said so I can fit it in at the right time. Because if I weren't buffering in the future, it would be cutting everything I said.
I could send you a 56K modem, right? If you want to.
That might help if it's good tech, if it's better technology than the one I've got here from Kmart.
Kmart still exists. That's actually how it works. Yeah. You know, 56K, actually, you can only get what the phone line maxes out at, which is like 48 or something, or 40 or something like that. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's inherent in the phone line.
I thought I was signing up for DSL, but I think it might have been some other letters. I'm not sure.
All right, well, this is Decline to State. We're going to a short break here. See you guys in a bit.
See you guys. We're going to get to the
show. I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Is freedom necessary?
As far as I'm concerned, it is, yes.
Why? Is it necessary for a productive society?
Yes, I should say it is. I mean, a genuinely productive society. I mean, I think you could produce plenty of goods without much freedom. But I think the whole sort of creative life of man is ultimately impossible without a considerable measure of individual freedom.
Hi, I'm Derek J. I'm an activist originally from Philadelphia. To me, an activist's calling is to actively work to advance a cause. The cause for which I work is personal freedom. I believe my life is best when I engage in voluntary interactions and self-government. I reject the idea that anyone else has a higher claim to my life or my body than I do. I see people who call themselves the government as a threat to my personal freedom. I realize you may feel differently, but my relationship with the people who call themselves the government is completely involuntary. I don't want a politician to represent me. To me, government is the idea that one group of people can coerce everyone to comply with an edict or face increasing punishments up to and including death. Despite perhaps the most noble of intentions, the best government services are a far cry from what could be provided for by voluntary interactions. Besides, the people who call themselves the government wage wars and put peaceful people in jail for crimes involving no victims. If Starbucks used some of its money to drop bombs, I wouldn't shop there. So why would I support the American Empire? The Empire does not.
This has been a piece from Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. It's a new full-length feature film that's been released to the internet. It tells the story of one of the Free Talk Live hosts. Now, for those of you who are not familiar, Free Talk Live is a nationally syndicated radio show that talks about libertarianism, voluntarism, ANCAP principles, free markets. They've been around for 6 or 7 years, I think. And one of the newer hosts, his name is Derek J. He moved up to New Hampshire, which is the target state of the Free State Project, where libertarian-minded folks are getting together to try to start something new and try to change government and hopefully lead into some means of freedom. Well, Derek J. apparently heard about this effort, and through the Free Talk Live show, he moved up there, became one of the hosts of one of the secondary network shows, and then when one of the main hosts, Ian Freeman, got tossed in the can for, I think it was standing in front of a police car, Derek J. ended up filling in for him as a fill-in host. And Derek J. had been involved in his own brands of activism up in Keene, New Hampshire. He was arrested a few times, once I think for filming inside of a courtroom after it had been prohibited by the dictatorial judge. He was arrested for pot smoking on a 420 celebration. There were some other prohibitions and court orders against him, and he ended up in jail facing a number of years on compounded fines and, you know, compounded crimes against the state. And I think he ended up doing a plea deal, and he recently got released on probation. But it was a substantial sentence, and it was all for victimless things. And I got to tell you, I do listen to Free Talk Live regularly, and Derek J has got to be he's got to be my favorite host. He's just, he's always upbeat. He's always positive. And even after spending nearly 2 months in the can, he's still really positive, and he still wants to contribute to change in Keene and the whole country. So someone I has taken different bits and pieces of his film of his activism. They've put it together and into a, I think, a 90-minute film. Now, I've only seen the first half of it. It was released just a day or two ago, I think. And it's a wonderful look at this guy's life. He's a young guy, I think, in his early 20s. And, you know, he's trying to find his way. He's trying to contribute to a cause he believes in. And he's finding just outrageous opposition from a state that doesn't want to let you be free. You know, he's been, all of these arrests are things where he's not harmed anybody. He's not hurt anybody. And, you know, it's a huge injustice. And some of the issues may seem silly and trite that he was arrested for. But I think that makes a point of how, you know, this guy was not a threat to anybody. He's not a threat to the state or the, you know, but, you know, you're not allowed to go against the system. And they'll make an example of you if they can. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, his continued activism and what he wants to do from here on. Rutto, were you able to see any of the video yet?
Unfortunately, not yet. But I'm going to watch the entire movie. What I can tell you right away is that I'm not sure who the guy is, and I'm not sure what he did. But according to your description, I can say right away he's a hero.
Yeah, a real hero.
Definitely.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
I watched the whole thing, and it was inspiring. It was kind of disturbing because, you know, the violence that the state, and of course just the absolute disregard for any rule of law that the state exhibited towards him is disgusting. I mean, it's disturbing. It could happen to anybody. And this is a very peaceful person, you know, someone who just clearly doesn't deserve bad things happening to him, like being thrown in the cage, and that's what occurred.
Of course,
I really was legitimately moved by, you know, his dedication to, you know, the principles of voluntarism and just getting out there and picking himself up after getting, you know, literally beaten in some cases and smiling anyway, and just, you know, keep on doing the good thing. And I would love to hear. If any of you listeners want to talk about activism in general or talk about Derek J and the video, please call in to Decline to State on Skype. That is Decline T-O State, one word. Or you can post questions in the IRC chat and we'll try to get around to them. I'd love to hear your opinions. And of course, if you want to talk about something completely different, anything goes. This is a free show, so we can talk about whatever you want.
Well, you know, think about one thing very important about this guy. It's not just that the rules that are completely arbitrary and that favor the state haven't been applied to him. It's not just that. It's, we have this set of rules, and this set of rules is going to be obeyed. And we have this own set of rules for ourselves, and we're going to obey this, right, to give the appearance of justice. But in the case of the people that we dislike because they point out how corrupt and malevolent we are, we're just going to disregard the rules. We're just going to completely ignore the rule of law and due process and whatever it may be. And we're going to ruin you. We're going to railroad you. We're going to make you feel pain. Physical, mental, emotional, psychological pain. Just to make an example off of you. This is what is happening. This is the reality.
And it's true. And he points out that we really don't have a free country anymore. The video starts off. He appears at an Obama appearance. He and some guys, I think it was in Philadelphia. He had a sign that said something like "Make freedom free" or "Legalize freedom" or something like that. And there were just a handful of him, and they wanted to get close enough to where the video cameras could pick their signs up in the background. When Obama came out of whatever building he was, and the cops came out and they're like, "No, you've got to go down this alley." And Derek J saying, "Well, I live on this street. Isn't this a public street? How can you close it off to the public?" You know, and he came close to being arrested on that day. You know, we don't have the, you know, it wasn't just that he could potentially be a threat to the president. He was a block away. They just didn't want the signs in the background. They didn't want to show that, you know, there's opposition, any opposition to our dear leader. You know, that's how controlling we've become. You know, and as I watch, you know, I followed, you know, his career over this last year, And it's been one thing after another until it finally reaches a crescendo where he gets knocked off his bike by a cop who was just trying to serve him. He was being served in some other court case. Actually, he wasn't even being served. The cop thought he needed to be served, and he had already been served. So the cop wasn't even doing anything valuable. But Derek J was like, "No, I don't have to stop for you because I'm on my way home. I'm not a threat to anybody. I'm not even in a car, so you can't pull me over." And the cop apparently like ran him off the road with his car, knocked him down, and aggressively arrested him. And it was just, it was a crescendo to his career in Keene of being abused by the system as he's just trying to live his life and do, what he thinks is right. And if we were to be living, we got a call.
Yeah, I think we got a caller. you're distorting a little there. Yeah, say that again. Do we lose him? Yo, bro. You turn off the feed for the show and make sure you got no other sounds coming out. You're distorting like crazy right now.
Back so, from the mic a little bit,
yeah,
too, there, bro.
Back away from your mic or turn yourself down a bit.
Okay, John, I just cut my volume on my computer to kill the feedback. Perfect.
Oh, that's so much
that
better.
That got better. You got a lot better. That's good.
There we go. That sounded.
So I'm just trying to figure out what I need to turn down so I can hear it, but still.
If you cut your show feed, I think you should be able to hear us over Skype.
You should be able to hear us through Skype. So you don't need to have the feed on. Good. You just pause that, and you should be able to hear us. We good
radio
now?
Radio magic.
So, caller, why don't you introduce yourself to us in the audience? Cutting out a bit. Can you do that again?
Am I coming in okay now?
Still a little loud. Can you turn down a little bit more there?
Yeah, how about that?
Perfect.
Oh, that's much better.
That's excellent.
My ears are bleeding.
Okay, sorry about that.
No problem. Technology is.
Oh, sorry, I have a ghetto setup here.
And you just got your internet back today, and I know that because a little bird told me.
Oh, yeah. I would like to comment on the rapacious nature of ISPs and their monopolies or oligarchies and the fact that they can basically treat their customers like crap and with no repercussions because they have no alternatives.
Absolutely. Sure. We'd love to have you on. Would you like to share your name with the audience?
I go by JD, or just Jay.
All right, cool. Nice to have you on, Jay. So what do you want to tell us?
Oh, long-time listener, first-time caller, big fan. I'm just joking. I'm really interested in you guys were talking about the wireless and kick topic earlier, and I was a little latecomer to that, but I just wanted to comment on, I think everybody has had this experience at least once in their life. I mean, there's even a Seinfeld episode about it, right? Where you're waiting for the cable guy.
Can I interrupt just really quick? You're still distorting and clipping a little bit. Can you turn down even more or move further away from audio device you're using? Yeah, it's a little better there for a second there.
Okay, how about that?
Oh, that's much better. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, and just for all the listeners out there, if you do call in, try to just get yourself set up and test your own audio beforehand. It just makes it calls go faster and smoother, so you can get more time to say what you want to say. All right, guys, continue.
Absolutely. My apologies. I was just saying that something that happened to me recently, just a couple of days ago, I just got my internet back up, and I was waiting for the company to come, fix it. And I understand you can't have 100% uptime. That's impossible. Things happen. But they made a schedule to be here, and I had to wait all day for them, and they didn't show up. And then I call them and ask why, and they say, oh, we fucked up, whatever. We'll schedule you for four days from now. I'm like, that's the earliest you can come, and there's nothing I can do. There's absolutely nothing I can do because there's no other carriers that I can go to. So, I mean, I could yell at them, but that's not going to accomplish anything. You know, I know the person on the phone is not directly responsible for it, but it just, the bigger implication is that when the companies have, because of state regulations in, because of the government having their fingers in areas that they shouldn't, such as regulating, you know, the ISPs to the extent that they do, it allows them to have these regional monopolies and oligarchies and just totally screw the consumer.
That's so true. And of course, you're referring to land carriers in this case, but this applies to wireless as well. Especially because wireless carriers still need to have landlines for many of their services. They use internet backhauls.
Absolutely.
Most of the time. Not always, though. Some do use microwave links between towers and some other stuff, but eventually they get to the fiber backhauls, and you need to dig underground for that. And that's the real key. That's where the government gets you. You have to have the permits. You have to go through the government to dig.
Yep.
And the zoning regulations and the permits are how they hand out their favors, and that's how they pick and choose who gets to, you know, get internet way. And it sucks. It really, really, really sucks.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I mean... Go ahead. I mean, you're fine.
Oh, okay. I was just going to point out that even with wireless, you know, the FCC, which is an unconstitutional government agency to begin with, regulates arbitrarily the bandwidth. And then I don't know if you guys have noticed, been following over the course of history, but ever since we discovered, you know, radio waves and electromagnetic spectrum, the FCC and by extension the government has been pulling over the years what's equivalent to eminent domain on property with spectrums of the bandwidth. Well, they just arbitrarily say, oh, you know what? We decided that we actually need this huge range of bandwidth for the government and civilians aren't allowed to use it or whatever, or we're going to regulate it. So, you know, that's another way in which they have their fingers in the market that just totally screws everyone over.
Well, the government needs to control every single new piece of technology that comes out that might threaten its hegemony, right? Hegemony, that's how you say it, right? I'm not sure. In any case, the government definitely needs to control that, because if it doesn't, that technology becomes a valid and, you know, useful vehicle to topple it. And, of course, the people who are sucking from the teeth of the state, from the stolen money, they're never, ever going to let go. And anything that threatens them is a threat, direct threat to their own well-being, right?
Absolutely. And I think they're going to fight tooth and nail to keep it.
So Jeff,
tooth and nail and gun.
So what do you think, Jay, is the what will break it? What do you think we can do, you know, outside of using force or, you know?
Well, I'm sorry, the guy who just spoke before you, your name?
Oh, that was Rutto.
Rutto, what you said about whenever new technology comes out and threatens to topple, you know, and they try to get their hands on it, I think that's what we're seeing with the internet right now. And it's kind of... It's kind of a arms race, so to speak, and hopefully the internet can break us out of this and maybe, you know, spread the freedom, as we like to say. But who knows? You know, they're doing their damnedest to control it.
I'm hopeful that we'll actually I'm hopeful that the people who are trying to control the internet will fail in their efforts. But it's really a tough fight. You know, it's really a tough battle, and the reason it's a really tough battle is because they really do control the public opinion. And by controlling the public opinion, they have the tools to, you know, the tools and the means to gain power over the internet. They only have to say, oh my God, terrorism, oh my God, child pornography. And that's basically what will make people say, you know, yeah, whatever you want, you know, let me take down my pants, give it to me in the ass, it's going to be fine. And that's the thing, right? That people are terrified.
Yep.
The worst part is, you know, I think that they really would love to control it much more than they do. And you know, fortunately, this is actually a good thing. The anytime you regulate new technology, anytime you try to impede, you know, the good forces of the market, whether it be the internet or something else, there is definitely a backlash. It's a double-edged sword for them, because if they impede it too much, obviously they're going to piss off a lot of people who are making money that they can tax. So, you know, you don't want to like shut down and completely regulate the internet as much as possible, because then you'll get in the way of businesses using it for financial transactions, online businesses and shipping, all sorts of things. And you know, the effect on commerce is just so great that they could never get away with something like that. It would make too many people mad. It would hurt their pocketbook too much. But what they do, and this is really kind of heinous, is they give the ability to control the internet to corporations. They give the ability to control, you know, these technologies to the corporations which are handing out favors to, and so that they can pick and choose, you know, how to censor it themselves, and to keep the profits going, keep the money flowing, but, you know, always have that ability to hit the kill switch and take away people's freedom, always be able to come in there and see what your emails are, or look at what you're downloading, you know, throttle your torrents so you can't, you know, get your copyrighted, you know, through forced material, whatever it may be. For certain pleasure.
That's true. And you guys, I'm sure, know about Tor, the onion routing, and it's captured my attention, and it really gives me hope, as you were saying, for the future, because with things like Tor, where it's totally a volunteer type thing where people are just doing it out of the goodness of wanting this anonymity and freedom from being spied on, that type of thinking and crowdsourcing and technology is going to really help.
It may help, but I'm fearful for that too. I mean, even with Tor, they can still monitor the exit nodes. I mean, and they could say, you know, at some point, oh, you're not allowed to transmit things that are encrypted. We need to see what you're moving, you know, and we're going to prohibit you from doing things because you might be downloading child pornography or trading drugs or whatever it is. So we're going to lock that down. So what makes me real hopeful, and the thing that I think is still not on their radar, is the Darknet project. You know, there are other, you know, Darknet and some other initiatives to create peer-to-peer internet-type communications. So we won't need to rely on the backbones and the big corporations, and it will just be like one house to the next sharing information and passing it along. You know, and I think if I lived in a community that was like, that had like, a college in it or some amount of people, you know, other than, you know, farmers, unfortunately, I would be like pushing for, I'd be like passing out flyers at the school so I could like get people to get involved so we could start our own mesh net or free node or whatever the technology is that would work so we could start experimenting with this and passing information around.
That's a really That's a really fascinating concept. I'll have to look into the darknet more. I'm glad you told me about that. I would just say if that started to snowball and the government felt threatened by that, what if they said, we're going to kill the power to your house, you know? I mean, to what extent would they go to maintain their monopoly on power?
Well, there were certain people. Absolutely. And, you know, yep. This has happened before and it will happen again. Hopefully it's not going to be us or you. What I can say is if you're interested in the Darknet project, there's a very particularly interesting, for to me at least, technically interesting and I think viable Darknet project called Hocknet, H-O-C-N-E-T, Hocknet, that is being developed right now and it's getting input from developers and other people that are interested in the project. And so it's basically on a development stage, but it's fascinating to me for, you know, basically because of the way it works. You should look into it. It's barely starting off the ground. It's really, really, really green right now. It'll mature though, and it'll provide an effective alternative to all ISPs. And eventually it'll provide an effective alternative to every single government controlled access point.
That's awesome.
I hope so. certainly helps. Yeah, so you know, we're running out of time here, unfortunately. So I'll let you get one last thing in. If you want to more thing here.
Yeah, I'll just finish by saying, you know, thanks for having me on, and I'll really look into that dark or the Hawknet, and I think that could be a saving grace.
Yeah, Roto, don't you have the URLs for those two things?
Yeah, if I recall correctly, the URL for the Hawknet project is reddit.com/r/Hawknet. Hawknet as in HOCNET. You may find project status updates and questions and other, you know, basically technical trivia there. And I hope you enjoy it.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care.
Thanks for calling in, man.
Thanks.
Great to have you on.
All right. Well, so we're about hitting that 90-minute mark, man.
Is it about that time to wrap it, Eternal?
I wanted to... We still got a little bit of time left here. I wanted to talk just a really brief amount about the Derek J stuff before, because I just think it's so important that we, you know, pound that into the ground. Go check out this video, Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. Definitely check it out. It's inspiring. I really enjoyed it. It's worth your 90 minutes. It's better than most of the crap you see in theaters anyway, because it has just real content and a good story. And, you know, lovable characters. So, you know, it's a really good time. Also, you know, the villains are very compelling. They're very realistic.
I give you an order and you're going to obey it.
All right, on the money right there.
I keep thinking, you know, the best way to deal with a cop is just to be quiet and not answer his questions. And if he gets belligerent, just continue. Don't answer his questions. Don't react. Don't move. Just freeze.
Yeah, that's my suggestion. Well, remember, one of the things that he got arrested for was, I believe, a resisting arrest charge for doing nothing, for just going limp, for not aiding the cops, not impeding the cops, just doing nothing, as if he had passed out, just doing nothing, and they charge him with resisting arrest, and it sticks.
That's one of the bullshit charges that will slap on you if you don't. Yeah, correct. It's completely fucking bullshit, right? What is it if it's not bullshit? Resisting arrest. Yes, you didn't do something the cop you liked. Resisting arrest. You know, and then you have to defend yourself against this lie in front of a jury, where the assholes that took you into a cage have the presumption of, you know, veracity, and you have the presumption of you know, being a liar.
What are the charges? Yeah. Resisting arrest. Well, what was he being arrested for? For resisting arrest.
It's really their logic, though, because what happens very frequently is they'll arrest you on something that's complete bullshit and so outrageous that they can't possibly make it stick. They can't even possibly indict you on it formally. Like, there's no way. It's insane. But they get you for resisting arrest, too, just because they can make it up and, you know, be like, he was resisting. Because, you know, they don't need proof.
Well, so you know what, you know, bullshit and bullshit charges have in common, right?
What?
If they fling enough at you, something is liable to stick.
True that. And they'd love to pile on, you know, like 10 charges with, like, penalties of, like, you know, 2 years in jail, 3 years in jail, 50, you know, $1,000 in fines or something ridiculous. And then they offer you the plea deal.
So,
and they say,
nice,
well,
right?
You can get 6 months in jail, and maybe, like, you know, four of those will be suspended on good behavior. You know,
They're so generous.
And you'll just pay us like $500. We'll cut you a good deal here. And they make it the economics are such that nobody can reasonably, you know, do anything but take the plea. They have to, because it's just the risk is like ruin your entire life forever, or get through have a really bad spot, and then maybe you can get off and, you know, go be a good, you know, citizen again.
Yeah, except, you know, you have to walk around with a felon badge in your back, so you can't find a good job. But of course, you know, they're so nice. They're so generous. They're getting, you know, they're allowing you to get out of their cages in, you know, soon. Instead of a year, it's just 30 days. And then you're supposed to report to a guy who is controlling whether you go back to the cage or not. Oh my God, so bad.
It's bad. And of course, you know, I was going to wrap up with this point. Did you guys, you know, all know, I'm pretty sure you guys know, I don't know if the listeners know, it's something like 2% of trials go to or 2% of charges go to trial.
For
juries,
federal.
See, like 2%. Is that federal? I mean, I'm sure, like, at state and local, it still can't be very high. And it's so many, you know, plea deals that are given out that if people just stopped taking the plea, it would clog the system. No one could possibly
it's
get
true.
Into court.
It's true.
And
they
just
have
to pick
think
and
about,
choose.
Think about something. The stats say something very, very clear about the whole process. And it is 99% of the cases that go to trial end up in a conviction. So you'd understand why people would, you know, say, okay, I'll take this extortion deal, plea bargain, they call it. It's really an extortion deal. You can understand why people would just take the label in the few days in a cage over the almost certain reality that they're going to face the same fucking label in a couple of years, right?
Even worse, I think plea deals are unconstitutional. Like, think about it. You're denied your right to a trial by jury. You're incriminating yourself, basically, to get out of it. But that's a requirement. You have to have the trial by jury. That's the only way the state can legitimately punish you.
They get around the law by saying, you know, you chose to do that. So you have the
it's
right,
voluntary,
but it's not mandatory, right?
Yeah, there's no coercion at all. There's no threat of, you know, life in a cage. Or you know, your entire life savings being taken away or something. Yeah, that doesn't exist at all. It's completely voluntary.
Yes, that's their take on it.
Oh yeah, but we're a little over time here, so you know, I'm just gonna end on one note. Bullshit. That's what I think about it all. It's all
bullshit. that's probably one of the best ways to end a rant, I think. So it's about that time, guys. This is Ronald McPaul watching the sunset over the Silicon Valley. And that's the heart of the Silicon Valley, Roto.
No.
Just saying. We welcome you to check out the archives to track our progress as we continue to spread the message on Decline FM or Decline to State on iTunes, to each his own. Remember, if there's a topic you want to hear discussed on the show, please submit to r/declinetostate@reddit.com and get Decline to State saved on Skype so you're ready to call in and talk about it. We are working on getting an improved design for the content on the Decline FM website, so look forward to it. And we continue to have a book raffle that should be going on for a little bit more longer, where we are going to be giving out the book Everything Voluntary. And our good caller for today, JB, is now entered. I would like to remind you that Decline to State is still brought to you free of charge, as well as commercial free. A big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, and our listeners. Decline to State is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capitalist bow ties and free market monocles. And remember, when asked, always decline to State. This is Ron McPaul signing out.
This is Eternal. Take care, guys. Have a good night.
This is Kwashiorkor, thanking you for spending your August 1st with me.
This is Roto, and I'm actually signing off from the heart of the Silicon Valley, the true heart of the Silicon Valley, watching the sun go down across 101 in California.
This is Wrong Opinion, languishing in the Rust Belt. I'll catch you guys next time.
You're such a troll, Roto. I love it.
Have a great night. And Ronald McPaul, have a great night too.
Later, guys.
Peace.
The State. The aggressor against the persons and property of the mass of the public. All states, everywhere, whether democratic, dictatorial, or monarchical, whether red, white, blue, or brown. The state.